This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. Get ready for the 49ers and the Jets. Tomorrow, the 49ers trying to avoid an 0-2 start against the Jets, the lowly Jets. That shouldn't be a problem, right? No, except the 49ers dealing with a few injuries. As you know, Richard Sherman is not going to be playing. No George Kittle this week. In fact, here's Kyle Shanahan explaining the thought process on waiting until the end of the week to rule George Kittle out of the game.
You know, I think it was just the normal person. We probably would have ruled him out earlier in the week, but we never do that really with George because of, you know, what he's shown us here over these 3 years with him. And we would have held out 2 more days to wait and see if it was a home game. But with us having to decide to travel today, whether it was worth it to bring him. I mean, if he's not going to play, it's much better for him to leave him here for a couple days and let him get his rehab and everything. And so we had to make that decision a little bit earlier today. And that'll help him and benefit him. And he'll meet us in West Virginia. And hopefully these 2 days staying here will help him. And hopefully he'll be ready to go next week.
So when you look at the receiving core injuries and George Kittle's injury last week, he played the second half, but he was not a factor. No wonder Jimmy G did not have an overly impressive game. That said, his numbers were not terrible. So JD and I, with your help here at 888-957-9570, we've been trying to figure out how much of what happened last week was Jimmy G's fault. And we're trying to do it scientifically and remove emotion because it's a fair question. Mike Florio this week wrote, well, if he doesn't play better, this will be his last year with the 49ers. Yeah, maybe, but that I think implies that they're more dissatisfied with him than the evidence says they are. I will say this, JD. My mother-in-law said last week after watching that game, she said, Cardinals are pretty good, but Jimmy G needs to throw the ball faster. And I think that's the way a lot of people looked at it.
Yeah, and I want to get into
astute observation.
It's a very astute observation, and because there's times where, again, when you're watching the game, you see receivers open, and you're thinking, wait a minute, why is he not throwing it there? And then he throws it somewhere where a guy's covered, and maybe it's a little bit inaccurate, or the entire rhythm of the play is off, and it winds up being an incompletion. I want to get into a little bit of depth and get your take on the mentality of Jimmy Garoppolo, because I think at his heart, he is a gunslinger. Right? Like, he is a guy that wants to come out and just have supreme confidence. Here, I'm going to come out, and here's what I see, and I'm going to make the play. And you might have to live with some mistakes. What is he doing? Oh, my goodness. Why did he make that throw? But I think you also, and last year showed, that he can make plays under those circumstances. And he can throw touchdown passes, and he can lead teams down. What I wonder is the dialogue between him and Kyle Shanahan as it relates to being more cautious, trying to limit mistakes, and is part of maybe the tentative nature and holding the ball too long and not trusting your first instinct, is part of that derived from Kyle Shanahan in some ways trying to coach the bad turnovers out of him by getting him to be more cautious? Hey, Jimmy, trust this read. Trust me. We're going to run this play, and this guy's going to be open. Boom. And if that play, if that specific play isn't there, then his whole mindset is thrown off at that point to where, okay, that play isn't there, but now I don't fully trust this. Whereas if I just took the snap and and thought, hey, this is what I'm going to do with it, then you could make a play. I feel like maybe there's an element of he's trying to do things Kyle Shanahan's way because he trusts Kyle Shanahan, and he should, and he's trying to limit mistakes. But by doing that, he's playing as a less confident player overall, and that's leading toward this in-between. What do I do? I don't, oh, that's not open. And I don't want to throw an interception, so now I'm not going to look at the second option, and now I'm going to throw it to the third option, and it's a little inaccurate, or the timing's off, and it's incomplete.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think I can embellish that interesting point you made, and I'll do that in just a moment. First, 888-957-9570. Smartest listeners and radio weighing in on Jimmy G. Where is this right now with him? Overreaction, right, for Florio or anyone to suggest or to imply that, wow, he's not going to be here long if he plays like that. From the 209, let's mortgage the farm for Trevor Lawrence. That's one way to look at it. From the 408, guys, I think Jimmy G will be better this week with our starting center back and Ayuk and Sanu bounce back week. From the 661, Jets fan here, the Niners fan should relax about this weekend. No Crowder, no Bell, SF defensive line. Rough game for Darnold. Jimmy G will have a big game. And from Posse and P-Town, the 707, the Saints game is all the evidence I need. Yeah, a terrific game against the Saints, obviously. Jimmy G has shown he can do it. Here's what I think we see, JD, in what you're talking about. You mentioned his mentality, and you said Jimmy G's a gunslinger. I think, and I noticed this last year, Chris Myers of Fox actually talked about this during a telecast last year. He said Jimmy Garoppolo has a linebacker's mentality because he used to be a linebacker. So when you consider that he kind of approaches the quarterback position with a linebacker's mentality, I think on the one hand, he's going one way. And as you describe it, you got Shanahan coaching him like, no, Jimmy, coaching him against some of his basic instincts. Then you end up with times when the quarterback is frozen just for a moment, like not sure what to do because instincts say one thing and he's still getting adjusted to this offense, and he's still adjusting to the coaching. I think sometimes he's caught in between. A very good source told me when they first got Jimmy Garoppolo, remember they got him and then he didn't play for a long time, which made sense.
Yeah.
But from a very good source, I heard that Shanahan was not thrilled with how quickly Jimmy G was picking up the offense early on. And I don't think that's, you know, that's understandable. But I think that, too, may speak to the fact that Jimmy G, his natural instincts sometimes run counter to the way Kyle Shanahan wants this offense to go. I don't think that means they're necessarily headed for a divorce, but I think I agree with you, and I think to a degree that explains why he looks like he's caught in between sometimes. Is that basically what you're talking about with the mentality?
I just think there's a pull between Jimmy just being himself and going out there and letting it rip in the context of Kyle Shanahan's offense and Jimmy dropping back and having, you know, Kyle Shanahan in the back of his mind thinking,
yes,
well, Kyle wants me to do this.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that little delay, if there's a slight delay in the thought, then you're going to be sunk a lot more often than you aren't. Now, I think at times Jimmy just lets it rip. And I think there's times where the 49ers have been down in games. Even the game against Arizona, they get down and they're down four. They're up the whole game and all of a sudden they're down four and it's the fourth quarter. And look, it was a great play call, but Jimmy comes right out of the chute and he hits Juszczyk with a great throw and it's a big gain and it was a great play. But like that was almost the first time in that game where it felt like to me it was, well, Kyle's got to put it on Jimmy now to throw it down the field and to let it rip. And I think they've actually managed both well, because I think Garoppolo, when Kyle Shanahan has said, all right, we're down, I got to have you go get to work and try to make something happen, I think Jimmy's performed well in those scenarios, but it always feels like they never want to go that route, you know, often. And I think even in that game, that throw was indicative of that. Now, the next throw where he, you know, drew the pass interference call and it was an awful interception, you know, that's the kind of play that you can't have. But there was a pass interference, and it wound up, you know, helping the 49ers lead down the field to eventually score. So I think there's a pull and a delay that's in play at times where he's trying to do what Kyle wants as opposed to just going out and playing, you know, backyard football like he would, you know, his mentality would dictate he should.
I think you may have solved a good portion of the riddle of Jimmy G. Seriously, I heard a former scout in the media last year describe it early in the year, so about a year ago, as the yips. Sometimes Jimmy Garoppolo looks like he has the yips.
Or he's trying not to make a mistake. Like he's just like there's times where he looks like he's trying not to make a mistake.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. Not everyone agrees on the text line. The 925 says you're overanalyzing. He's above average. His mistakes will always be at inopportune times. But I don't think so. I think it's a great point. I think there's times when Jimmy G, and then when he does make, follows his instincts, makes some bad, ill-advised throws, and then Kyle pulls the reins tighter, right? Like we saw last year, the playoff game against Minnesota. It's like, he ain't throwing it. I'm not going to have him throw the ball. And I know that worked out well, and they won. Yeah, but I think that's when you get the push and pull and the tug, and I think it's an issue for Jimmy Garoppolo.
And I think, but managing that, I think is how this thing gets fixed. And because and what you said as far as Kyle Shanahan and the way he managed the playoff, like it was the right call for Kyle Shanahan. When after he threw the interception against the Vikings, it was the right call because the 49ers defense was dominating and they were able to run the football. But that game got to a point where Garoppolo had one of his uh-oh throws and the ball's picked off. And you're thinking at that point, the only way we lose, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're thinking the only way we lose is if he does that again. So I'm going to do everything I can to run the ball and reassert control of the game with the running game and the halftime break and the defense. And that's exactly what happened. Now, if the 49ers had gotten stuffed and or missed a field goal or, you know, had not been able to do that, then they would have wound up in a position where Garoppolo would have had to have made some throws, but they were able to reassert control of that game. And I think that's the right move because you're trying to win. You're trying in that moment to get to have, you know, give your team the best chance to win. And he did that. But what we've also seen from Kyle Shanahan, and I think the Super Bowl is an example. And I think week one is an example. And the New Orleans game is an example in games they've won. The Rams game last year is an example. When they need him to make a throw, Kyle Shanahan has no problem flipping the switch from okay, I'm trying to treat you with kid gloves a little bit, but and prevent you from making a catastrophic mistake. But now I need you to make a big play, and so you got to go do it. So it's like Kyle Shanahan does trust him. It's just at times he would prefer not to have to break the glass and go to the emergency plan, if you will.
And Kyle Shanahan, of course, trusts his offense, and he trusts that we run the ball, play action, we're setting up the plays downfield. It's going to be there, Jimmy. You just got to make the throw. That brings me back around to some criticism of Jimmy Garoppolo that I don't think is fair. Chris Sims, in his evaluation of quarterbacks, he had Jimmy Garoppolo, he had him pretty low.
20th.
Yeah, and one of the reasons, and then he went on TV and NBC Sports Bay Area, and he said, you know what, just to a degree, I think that he's a product of that system, and I can't grade him higher because you know Shanahan makes him look so good. A lot of people, we've had people on the text line say that. I don't think that's entirely fair. I understand the point, but to downgrade a guy because his system sets him up to make open throws, he still has to make the plays, he still has to make the throws, so I don't think that's a fair criticism, JD. What do you think?
And wouldn't you say more often than not he's made the throws? Like I just more often, and I know we get into this all the time of, well, he didn't make the throw in the Super Bowl, and he didn't make the throw against the Cardinals. Well, he did make the throw against New Orleans, and he did make the throw against the Rams, and he made a huge throw against the Steelers when they were down. And they scored to win that game when it could have got away from him. He's made big throws when they've needed him to make big throws. He made some big throws in Seattle in Week 17 as the 49ers took control of that game early. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's definitely got it in him. And I think it's unfair to say, well, he didn't win the Super Bowl and he didn't have a good game in the Super Bowl and he missed the one throw that would have won the game in the Super Bowl. And then because of that, the conversation shifts to, well, he more often than not doesn't make the big throw, because that's just false. More often than not, in Jimmy Garoppolo's tenure with the 49ers, he has made the big throw.
I think he's a very good quarterback, and I think there's still room for a lot of improvement, and I don't think it's a stretch to think that he can very soon become an excellent quarterback. Not everyone agrees. Cam Inman was on the station recently, and I asked him that question, and he said, Cam Inman said, I think he's already an excellent quarterback. On the text line here from the 415, Jimmy's lack of throwing allows defenses to load the box, which makes it harder for Shanahan. Imagine if Shanahan had a quarterback that a defense couldn't load the box on like Aaron Rodgers. The system definitely carries Jimmy. I understand the point, and I think you have to give a quarterback, any quarterback, credit if he's able to be productive within a system. He deserves credit. The coaches deserve credit. I think what we're seeing is a work in progress, and sometimes, JD, I think you've expertly pointed out where some of the kinks are there, and so those are the things that cause the issues when Jimmy G's, his instincts are counter to what they want him to do, but I think it's still improving, and I think there's every reason for 49er fans and, more importantly, Shanahan to think, yeah, I can win the Super Bowl with this guy. I don't see why they couldn't win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
No, and I think last year showed that they can win, even though they didn't win, because they were as close as they were to getting it done. And honestly, you could make the case that Garoppolo could have played the exact same game that he played in that Super Bowl. Forget about the throw to Sanders that was missed. If, you know, they get to Mahomes on the third down where he makes the big play and you know, Bosa was held or he wasn't held, you know, whatever. But if you make that play defensively, Garoppolo probably wins the Super Bowl MVP with the game that he had already played. So, again, we're talking about – and then what would the conversation be then? Like, it would be undoubtable. Like, it's funny how we're talking about two throws, basically, and it's like now Jimmy Garoppolo ain't it, whereas – you know, if he had never even had to make that throw, we'd be talking about Jimmy Garoppolo like he's an all-time great, because he would have a Super Bowl under his belt. So it's just that fine line, you know, okay, is he an all-time great? No. I mean, I'm not going down that road. He wouldn't be an all-time great even if he had won the Super Bowl last year. But I do think he deserves a little bit more benefit of the doubt in terms of growth, in terms of the ability to get better in his second full season as a starting quarterback, in terms of his ability to still make plays more often than not, and you know, that this thing isn't headed down a path of no return. You know, I think that's still very much on the table.
Yeah, appreciate the feedback here at 888-957-9570. And honestly, JD, I think you have helped me understand what's going on a little better, because the way you described it, it makes perfect sense. From the 510, Jimmy Garoppolo is 20th best at best, which any of those other quarterbacks on this team, and the Niners are better.
I don't agree.
I don't either. And going back to last week, and I know if you looked at any of the film afterwards, yeah, there were a number of occasions where guys were open and Jimmy Garoppolo didn't see him. That said, I mean, that was a very difficult second half for him. You know, people are very high on Trent Taylor, and bless him, he's in the NFL, he's overcome injury, but people want to compare him to Wes Welker because, you know, he's small and he's white and he's coached by Wes Welker. He ain't Wes Welker. I don't think he's that good. My point isn't to go after Trent Taylor, it's to point out that Jimmy, that's one of Jimmy's favorite receivers, but he's not that good. He didn't have a lot to work with last week, John Dickinson, especially in that second half.
Yeah, and I'll admit, as much, you know, and I think I got duped a little bit by, I'm probably one of those that's been a little bit too high on Trent Taylor. I did put him in the category of, you know, found money, basically. Like Dante Pettis, we heard a lot about Dante Pettis. I wasn't sold. He didn't have a great game, obviously, week one. I gave Trent Taylor more the benefit of the doubt because he did have a good camp and actually had tangible success with Jimmy Garoppolo in real games down the stretch in 2017.
No question.
But you're right. I think we have overrated, and I'll put myself in that category. Maybe not you, but those of us that have, you know, spoken about Trent Taylor a certain way, I think maybe I've overrated him a little bit in that respect. But I also think he's, you know, like you said, one of Jimmy Garoppolo's favorite receivers. I think he deserves an opportunity as somebody that hasn't really played a meaningful game in a long time to get back and get in rhythm with his quarterback. So I still think he can be a factor. I've never said he's Wes Welker or Edelman or any of those guys. Like, that's a fool's conversation. But is he somebody that can pick up a couple of key first downs for you because your quarterback likes throwing to him and trusts himself to throw to him? Yeah, I think he can be that. I like Trent Taylor more in the context of the 49ers having Debo and Ayuk and Sanu and Kendrick Bourne. You know, and obviously Kendrick Bourne would be ahead of Sanu on that depth chart. But I like, if you're telling me Trent Taylor's your fifth best guy, then I'm good with Trent Taylor being on your team.
Yeah, in all fairness to Trent Taylor, the book's not finished yet. We'll see. And also, he is returning from injury. And it wasn't his fault that Garoppolo, you know, threw it behind him last week. This is a very fair question, JD. 888-957-9570. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for participating. Appreciate this today. From the 510, if you think Garoppolo is so good, what does he do better than average? Does he do anything better than average? You want to tackle that one, JD, or you want me to? I think it's a fair question.
It's a fair question. I'll let you take this one first.
I think if you look at – first thing, you look at the quarterback. The team won last year, right, 13 wins. And I know that you don't have to be a great quarterback if you got a great defense, great running game. So he won last year, and he's been a winner. And if you look at his passer rating last year – and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I can easily look that up. But they were excellent. His passing numbers last year were excellent. His completion percentage was very high despite – foibles here and there. And you can say, well, that's all the system. Yeah, but he still had to do it. So I would say his interception rate is way too high. But other than that, he's proven to be a very good to excellent passer. So that's, I think his completion percentage is definitely better than average.
Yeah, it's better than you think it is. Like, that's you think of Jimmy, you know, kind of in the context of, boy, he has those games where he's not accurate. And that obviously is going to lead to some incompletions, but the truth is the numbers say otherwise. The numbers say he does complete passes at a high rate. To me, it's just the critical mistake. You know, that's the only thing. Like, I would, and I just wonder how much of the risk of a critical mistake do you have to live with? Because I think the 49ers need to be a little more open-minded a little more frequently in allowing him to maybe make a mistake, but also making him comfortable enough to make a few more big plays. And maybe week one against Arizona with guys out is not the time to do it, but I think you need him playing confidently, especially in the regular season. If you want to dial it back in the playoffs somewhat, or if you feel like, hey, we have a real advantage with our defense and our running game, and I don't want to give him an opportunity to make another critical mistake, that's fine. And Kyle Shanahan did that last year, and it worked. But I think in the regular season, you need your quarterback out there for 16 games thinking he's a boss, and he's going to make plays. Like, I think more often than not, the 49ers have enough talent, and he's good enough to where you're going to win more games than you don't playing it that way. So if the tentative nature of his play was because Kyle Shanahan was trying to coach something out of him, and he was thinking about that, that needs to go away, like, immediately. Yeah. Because you got to win regular season games, and if he's going to look like he's unsure all year, that's going to lead to major problems, and that's going to lead, I think, to a skewed evaluation of what he is overall, because they're going to lose more games.
What does Jimmy Garoppolo do better than average? Again, I think that's a great question. But, and I know it's easier now to complete a pass in the NFL than it ever was before. It's not easy, but it's easier than it used to be. Last year, his completion percentage was 69.1, and he threw for just under 4,000 yards. Those numbers are better than average. And as far as things that don't have anything to do with the numbers, he also has shown right, JD, that when he throws an interception or has a bad game, he's shown the ability to bounce back from that. A lot of people who watch the 49ers closely will tell you, yeah, you watch him. He throws an interception, and then it actually makes him better. Now, you'd rather he not throw the interception in the first place, but that speaks to the mentality you need your quarterback to have, and he does that. Bouncing back from mistakes, he does that much better than average.
I think you got to live with maybe a few more mistakes if you're going to reap the benefits of a few more big plays. Now, where that line is drawn, I'm not sure, but I think the 49ers need to be a little bit more aggressive in allowing him to develop and be a quarterback than trying to coddle and you know, act like you're concerned that he's going to lose the game for you. Act confident that he's going to go win a game for you, because I think he's shown more often than not that he can win a game for you.
So you're saying that Kyle Shanahan and fans just need to adapt the mentality of, ah, that's just Jimmy being Jimmy, right? Ah, I threw a bad interception. That's just Jimmy being Jimmy.
I would rather have him lose with him being aggressive than lose because he's being too tentative.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's interesting to see this develop, and it'll be interesting to see how he plays tomorrow against a Jets team. And I think he will bounce back. And I don't say that because he's my guy and I'm rooting for Jimmy G. I just think you look at the Bills did, Josh Allen did it to the Jets last week. There are going to be opportunities for Jimmy tomorrow, assuming that he gets anything out of the receiver position. Speaking of quarterbacks, as promised, coming up, he's a great quarterback, but an all-time great coach says this guy is underrated. Can you guess who it is? We'll tell you next. Whitey and JD, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks for the participation today at 888-957-9570. Seriously, the Jimmy G conversation today, I really appreciate the level of it, because people are making some really good points and there's not a lot of emotion in it. And I certainly understand emotion, and that's part of the fun of being a fan. But people are taking some really objective views of Jimmy Garoppolo. We'll circle back to that conversation because it's really interesting today. So thank you. People making some very, very keen observations of Jimmy G, the good and the bad. And maybe it is just a matter of, hey, you got to let Jimmy be Jimmy. And gradually he'll improve. Also coming up, tell you about the great quarterback who, according to one great coach, is actually underrated. So we'll get into some of that as far as today's quarterbacks, the most overrated and underrated on 95.7 The Game. Before we do any of that, JD, I know that with the Baybridge series going on, you wanted to circle back to baseball with the A's last night, clinching a postseason spot at the expense of the Giants. So a huge game for both Bay Area teams. The A's are in the postseason. We'll see whether they can win the division. They probably will. The Giants are 25-25 now, so they have the same winning percentage as the St. Louis Cardinals, who are also a 500 club. But right now, the Cardinals are sitting sixth in the playoff seeding, and the Giants would be out. So it's going to be bumpy down the stretch here, but if the Giants take care of business, every chance they'll be in this postseason, such as it is.
Yeah, and the next two games are critical because, you know, Colorado finds themselves really on the outside looking in. The Dodgers have hammered them a couple of games, and the reason I bring up the Rockies is because the Rockies were a team, you know, a week or so ago you would have thought, all right, hey, the Giants and Rockies are battling for this last spot, and the four games that they play head-to-head are going to be huge. Now the Rockies have found themselves behind the group, not only the Giants, but behind the Reds and the Cardinals and the Phillies and the Marlins, all of these teams that are battling basically for four or five of the eight spots. So the Giants are going to have to beat the Rockies, but the Rockies are, it's not like the Rockies are going to come into San Francisco and say, hey, we got to just beat the Giants. Like, them beating the Giants may not really matter, because there's other teams. It at least matter to them. So I think that's a beneficial aspect to what's going on with the Giants playing the Rockies, you know, for four games after they're done with the A's. But the key for the Giants is to get one of the next two. If they can do that, then they're 500, which I think, you know, that would keep them at that point. I think that would keep them probably tied for the last spot, because somebody will lose today and it'll all drop. Like, that's the thing. You've got all these teams that are battling for spots, And if one wins and one loses, they may switch positions. But as long as one of them or two of them lose out of the group and the Giants can win, they're not going to lose any ground as to where they are right now in terms of being tied, although on the outside looking in. So if the Giants can win one of the next two and beat 26 and 26 with the final eight games against the Rockies and the Padres, I still think they're in really good shape because that Rockies series is the series where you can get three out of four or just try to win every game. Not saying it will be easy by any stretch, but that it allows you to use the Rockies series to put you in a position of advantage rather than, oh, you need those just to keep pace. And I think, you know, just getting the one against the A's the next couple of days would be huge toward making that Rockies series really meaningful in a positive way for the Giants, where it's going to be less meaningful for the Rockies. And I think that's where maybe you could get on a roll and push toward being in a position to get one of those spots over the course of the final weekend. The problematic aspect, though, Whitey, for me, I don't think there's a firm answer to this question, but I want to ask it to you. And we gave the numbers earlier. The Giants are 17-4 against the Diamondbacks, the Mariners, the Angels, and the Rangers. 17-4. They're 8-21 against everybody else, and they're 3-13 against the A's, Rockies, and Padres, the three teams that they finish and play these last 10 games against. Given that data, and again, I don't think we know the answer, and I think the final week will tell the story. Are the Giants frauds? Like, are the Giants frauds? Like, what they have done, I know that's a strong term, but because I think when you look at it under that lens, you can make a claim that what they've done to this point, while a surprise, has been fool's gold.
No, they're not frauds, and I think no matter what happens from here, I think they've had a successful season based on some of the things that we said they needed to do before the season started. I don't know how good they are. They're better than we thought they would be, but this season is so strange. I don't think they're frauds. We said before the season started, I remember talking to you about this. It's kind of funny, right? Because the NBA season is not over yet, but it started almost a year ago. The baseball season seems like it just started, and it's already almost over. So another one of these 2020 things that's a little disorienting. But before the season started, I remember discussing with you, hey, what do the Giants need to do for this to be a successful season? I thought one of the things they needed to do was just to establish that they have a couple of players played well enough for them to be able to say, okay, we've got something going forward. To me, that was the most vital thing about this year for them. Not a lot you can accomplish in this short year anyway. You know, somebody's going to win a World Series, which is great. We knew the Giants weren't in that bunch. So if they could just come out of the season with a sense that this guy, that guy, you know, I think we got something here, I think that would make the season a success. I think they've already done that. I think Dubon showing that he can play center field, although when he throws it to third base, JD, he's playing center field. There's a guy in first. There's a base hit. He tries to throw the guy to third, and then the hitter, the trail runner, gets to second, and both runs score. It's like I would yell at a guy on my softball team for doing that. But anyway, I think he's shown he can play center. He's shown some versatility. Joey Bart, there's a lot of promise there. He came up. He had, you know, there were some bumps in the road for him. He's proven that, okay, we saw his arm this week. He threw out a runner. So I think the season's already been a success. Are they frauds? Are they going to collapse here? Are they going to maybe get in the playoffs to get knocked out early? I know that's fun, but to me it's window dressing about what they really needed to accomplish this year. And I think a lot of that they are accomplished. Look at Yastrzemski. There's a guy that, wow, we may have a piece going forward. He's a little further advanced. But you know what? That might be a guy that we keep around until we're good again. He's that good, and he's relatively young. So I don't think they're frauds, whether they are or not in terms of their record. I don't think that matters as far as the other, as much as the other things that they've already accomplished.
Yeah, and I'll go back to what I said when you asked me, you know, what makes a successful season for the Giants, and I said just don't be a complete and utter embarrassment, and they have already accomplished that. And I know we kind of laughed and joked about it in the moment, but and that's fine. But it was a truthful statement for me. It was just don't be one of the, you know, don't allow the acknowledged hole that Gabe Kapler said he was walking, you know, into his tenure as Giants manager, don't allow that hole to get deeper. And it hasn't gotten deeper. It got off to a horrific start. I still think over 162 games next year, you know, things are going to we're going to feel very strongly about Gabe Kapler one way or the other a year from now. And I don't think anything that happens this year dictates that one way or another. But the one thing that is a win for him is the fact that it didn't get worse. And I said this, I was doing the night show this week with Covey, and I want to run this one by you. Look, I had the Giants win in 25, 26 games, tops. So if they win two more games out of the last 10, they will have exceeded what I believed they could be. The one thing that I hope doesn't happen, because I'm with you and I've said this, I don't think whether they make the playoffs or not doesn't matter. Whether they finish with 27 wins or 29 wins really doesn't matter. Or 30, to me. I mean, I don't think they would have been a playoff team under any circumstances over 162. So, you know, even if you let eight teams make it, I don't think they would have held up over 162. Regardless of all of that, the one thing I hope for Gabe Kapler's sake and for Giants fans' sake this last week, I hope Kapler doesn't have the kind of week that he had back in the middle of August, because I think right now this year is a win for him. Okay, right now, like, they're 25-25 and they're in it, and they might make it, they might not, but they're gonna be better than expected. Like, right now, they are going to be better than expected. The hole will not have been dug deeper. It's a price of admission win for him, right? Like, 2020 will not detract the way anybody feels about Gabe Kapler going toward 2021, as it stands right now. Okay? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. What I think about Gabe Kapler, you know, when he had that another Gabe Gaffler move trying to take Rodgers out, when it's like, no, you can't take him out now. He's got to stay in. Remember how embarrassing was that? At the time, one of the observations I had was, you know what? They've got a really young staff. Maybe he needs a little more experienced bench coach. Nothing against Kai Correa, but, you know, he never came close to playing in the majors. One thing I've noticed since then, and maybe this is a misread, it's so difficult because we're not even in the clubhouse anymore. I notice a lot more than I ever used to. Gabe Kapler and Kai Correa just right next to each other, right there at the top step, arms on the railing. I suspect that perhaps one of the solutions proposed to Gabe Kapler making these gaffes is, look, just be discussing this with your bench coach. Just make sure that you got your head in the game and you're talking about it with somebody. I don't know if that's true, but it's right. Something I've noticed more of, and to me it's smart. I know that we talked to Farhan on the afternoon show right after that happened, and, you know, he kind of downplayed it, but obviously he had said, you know, you can't do that again. So that's my guess, is that one of the potential solutions to that was, I'm guessing someone said, look, just make sure you're talking, whatever you're going to do, that's why the bench coach is there. So just talk to him, right? Even if it's just telling him what you're going to do, bounce it off somebody.
Right. And it's a matter of checks and balances. Hey, I'm going to go get him. And then the bench coach can say, no, don't do that. Why are you doing that? You can't do that. And then nobody knows that you screwed up except you and him, and that's fine.
Right.
like that. That's good. No, I think you're right about that. And I think it has helped. There's no doubt. Like, just having another, okay, mm-hmm. Here's where I think we are in the game. Here are the moves that are coming that I'm probably going to have to make. If they do this, we're going to do this. And you just have a second set of eyes that can help you through it to where you don't. You're making sure that you're picking the right move more
consistently. That's why he's there. And it doesn't have to be, you're not asking his permission. You're telling him what you're going to do, so that if you say something that, you know, you're not actually allowed to do, Kai Correa can say, hey, no, can't actually do that. So that's one thing. The other thing I'd say, talking about next year, you know, are they frauds? I do think that anybody, and fans are going to be fans, so a lot of people will do this. People will look at this year, however it ends up, and people will have high expectations for next year. Now, we don't know what the team's going to be, what additions.
Yeah, don't do that, though.
Yeah.
Don't do that, Giants fans.
That'd be at your own risk, because they are really, you know, this year there are 8 of 15 teams are going to get in the postseason. 8 of 15. They have a chance to be one of the 8. So if anybody is going to think, whoa, postseason, they'll be better next year. Hey, maybe they'll win the division. I just think that would be faulty reasoning, and you're setting yourself up for some disappointment, in my opinion.
Well, no, and you have to look at it this way, too, big picture. They're not the Dodgers, and they're not the Padres. And like, so at best, right there, next year, you're fighting for third place in your own division. Like that, I mean, that, mm-hmm. like, that's just flat out. Like, mm-hmm. even if you think they can be sneaky competitive, but I think they're going to be a lot, I think they're going to be a different version of what they've been this year, next year, and I think that's a team that can be 500 over, let's say, a given 60-game stretch, but the other 102 games are going to dictate what you actually are. So, and again, I think this year, as much as, you know, hey, 25 and 25, and, you know, would they be an 81 win team over 162? No way. Like, in my mind, no way. And you know, because your deficiencies are, you know, they are fleshed out over the course of a long season. So, you know, would this team be better than, maybe they would still be better than expected, but I think we're talking about mid 70s in terms of what this team would project to be over 162. And even that would be a little bit better, you know, if you thought, hey, maybe they're going to lose, you know, maybe they're going to win 70 or 60, you know, high 60s, low 70s, something like that. So even mid 70s would still be better than expected. I just would be cautious to translate, oh, 30 and 30, that this team should be an 81 win team, or they were an 81 win team. I don't think it really works that way. I want to finish the point about Gabe Kapler. The one thing that I really hope doesn't happen is that the last week overly skews his season, because like he's won, like I've said, he's had a, as of right now, with 10 games to go, he's had a successful season. The only thing that can ruin that for him, it's not even them not making it. It's not even them going, let's say they go 2-8 or 3-7 at the end here and don't make it. Let's say they go 3-7 and don't make it. Even that would still be a successful season. The one thing that he can't have happen, and I mean this, and nobody's been more critical of Gabe Kapler than I have. I didn't like the hire. Everybody knows the story there. The one thing I hope doesn't happen, Whitey, is he has a stretch where there's a gaffe or there's multiple moves that don't work that lead to maybe some heartbreaking losses, because I think fans will go nuts if the lasting taste of this season is they would have made the playoffs, but Gabe Kapler bungled it in the final week of the season because they lost 3 leads in the 9th inning again over an 8 or a 9 game stretch, or he pinch hit this guy and he shouldn't have, or Brandon Belt wasn't playing and why wasn't he? Like, if it, because they're still, as much as we can say he's done a good job the last month, and he has, and he deserves credit for it, if the lasting belief for this season is that he took something away from the Giants fans that they were about ready to taste, then he'll wreck it. And it'll be unfair, but it will be true, because there's still that bubbling beneath the surface that he can't get it done. And, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more cautious about it. Like, I'm not going to crush him if that winds up happening and they win 28 games, because they still would have had a better season than anticipated, and I think he would deserve credit for it. I just hope that everybody's opinion of him doesn't completely shift back to where it was at the beginning of the year based on 2 or 3 moves this last week of the year, when they're in a position that they really aren't in to begin with, if that makes sense.
Let me just say this on his behalf, and I really can only talk about myself, but maybe you've worked at a place where they had these signs, or you've seen them on TV or movies, like at a factory, and there's a sign on the wall that says, this many days since our last accident, right? I think they used to have one of those, like on The Simpsons, this many days, and then they put the number up there. Well, the Giants in the clubhouse should have this many days since our last catcher's interference. Because remember there for a while, it was like every other game, catcher's interference. My point is, because you had Heinemann and it wasn't even Tromp yet before they got him back up, right? It was Brantley. My point is that Gabe Kapler early on, And I'm with you. I'm not sure he's a good manager, but I think he looked, because of the circumstances, like maybe a worse manager than he was. I mean, I know you can't blame a manager for catcher's interference, except when they got off that terrible start and you have those things happening, it started to look like, does anybody there have any idea what's going on? When the bullpen was just a mess and he made some bad decisions on Gott, and then it looked like, oh my goodness, I don't know if he has any idea what he's doing. Well, he did make some bad decisions, but the bottom line there was, and I think we actually talked about this, JD, he didn't have a lot of good choices. So to me, that's one thing I'm looking at. I think the team is a little more stable now with Bart up, and they have, and the bullpen is pitching better. So I think there are fewer traps for him to stumble into. I think he has better choices that are available to him. So to me personally, I look at him maybe not as a good manager yet, but I don't look at him like, I don't think this guy can do it. I don't think he belongs. I don't look at him that way anymore. And I think that if they get into the postseason, and I think we disagree here, but to me, that can only help. As this is a guy who's still rehabbing his image as a manager, right? That's why it's so curious that the Giants even hired him. I know we agree on that. But he's still kind of proving to the world, I could be a baseball manager. And if they finish the season decently, whether that involves a postseason or not, I think it helps him rehabilitate his image as a manager.
I still believe in Trevor Gott.
And I actually don't even think they have to make it. And I don't think it helps rehabilitate. I don't think they have to make it. And in fact, I think you actually get a truer picture if they don't make it. And I know I said this a couple weeks ago, and people are like, "What do you mean?" I think a 28-32 Giants team or a 29-31 Giants team that doesn't make it, that forces you to acknowledge, hey, they weren't good enough. But they were better than expected, but they weren't a playoff team. Like I think in that context, they wouldn't deserve to be considered a playoff team, and I don't think they deserve to be considered a playoff team regardless. If it's one of these extra spots, unless they go out and go 8-2 in the last 10, then I would say, okay, yeah, you deserve to be a playoff team. But I feel like they don't deserve to be considered a playoff team under normal circumstances, so I kind of don't want that to be part of the equation, because I think it's going to skew – I think it skews the conversation to a point that it doesn't need to go. Like, they cannot make it, and you can still say the same things about, boy, that was a better-than-expected short season. You know, that can still be true. I just think that it inflates. I think it actually is a bad thing if they can, if next year we're talking about, well, they were a playoff team last year. I think that actually hurts the Giants and hurts Kapler next year. I just hope, and I mean this, I hope he doesn't wreck, because you know how fans are. If he butchers some games in this last week, even if it gets down to the final, let's say three games of the year, you know, or the final, they've got the doubleheader against the Padres, or the final two games next Saturday and Sunday, and he butchers a game that would put him in and it puts him out, even if it's just the one game and everything the next week goes normal up until that point, the lasting effect will be, like, it will completely wipe away any of the stock that he's built up in coming back from his awful start over the course of the last month.
Yeah, he's had a pretty good month. I'm also curious to see if you have any, or to hear, I should say, if you have any observations of Basabe, whom we saw this week when Yaz got hurt. He had a pretty decent, he got his first hit, had some good at-bats. So I'd love to know what you think of that. But coming up here, we're going to get back to the quarterback convo. Also, what went wrong against Arizona and how the 49ers can make it right against the Jets. It's coming up. Whitey and JD, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.